This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. We're back, and this time joined by Rachel Graham, who has been supporting people through this time at Healing Springs Ranch, a recovery centre she co-founded in Texas. During the pandemic, 39% of people with a history of addiction have reported a reoccurrence of their addictive behaviour, according to YouGov. Also hugely concerning is that referrals are down 57% across the UK, as more people struggle on their own during this time. That's why I was so glad to have Rachel share her insight and offer a message of hope for what we can all do to support recovery.
My name is Rachel Graham, and we're talking about the lockdown, the quarantine, and this pandemic. I'm based in the United States in Texas, and so there's been some controversy around our state in terms of opening up maybe too soon. As we went into lockdown, it was, you know, very stressful for a lot of folks. Our business is considered an essential business, so we continued to operate. But as you can imagine, the concern of taking people into a residential treatment facility is there, but it's not just your clients that have the concern, it's your staff too. Mm-hmm. And knowing that the clients stay there, but the staff come and go, you know, we have staff that 24/7 that are shifts that come and go. So a couple of things I've noticed, well, first of all, we had all non-essential employees stay off campus during that time frame. And so what I started to notice is that, you know, people were becoming very detached from even the business and not knowing what's going on. They're used to being involved in it and feeling isolated, feeling lonely, especially if they were quarantined alone, not with family members in that scenario. And so a couple of things that we've really worked on and encouraging people to do is really connect. And we have a digital era now. We can connect even digitally is good. But looking at self-care, self-care is a big proponent of how you help yourself through difficult times. This pandemic often puts a spotlight on fears, concerns, worries that we have that go beyond even the pandemic. And so what we've seen is a rise in addiction and addictive patterns because of people's discomfort in what's going on, the ambiguity about what's going to happen. What if I get this? Could I survive it? My family members, loved ones, those types of things. And so a couple of things I think are really helpful during these times for people to utilize in terms of self-care. And so one of the things I had to do was turn off the media. The media, there was so much out there, and some of it was slanted one direction, the other direction, lots of social media stuff. I really had to limit what I ingest because we are what we consume, whether it's food, it's information, it's relationships. We become what we consume. So I had to put a governor, if you will, on the things I was going to participate in. I also had to watch the types of movies that I watched. There are certain types of movies that I love to watch before all of this. But now with all of this, I need lighthearted comedies, things that make me laugh, things that make me happy, things along those lines. Another thing is gratitude, expressing gratitude every day for the things that are going right. You know, we can all focus on the things that are wrong, the negatives in our life. And recently, I've been challenging myself, if I go to a negative place about something, then I have to counteract it with two positives. Mm-hmm. So if I beat myself up, because this is a common thing here that we eat too much during the pandemic and people are gaining weight. Okay, so you gain some weight, but you're still healthy, Rachel. You know, you still have healthy children. You have a roof over your head. You're not worried about where your next meal comes from. So you try to find positive things. Another thing is very, very powerful during this time is connection with nature and being out in nature, being in experiencing nature for everything it has to offer and being present while you're there. You know, oftentimes we're very busy. We stay busy. Oftentimes we are busy to avoid emotional stuff too. Mm-hmm. And when things slow down, which is kind of what happened, this kind of put a stop to certain behaviors and being busy and running from here to there to yonder, and is forcing us to look at some things, is to start exploring some of those things that are uncomfortable for you. And if you're feeling pain or triggered, start going there. Start thinking about what is that? Use your support system. Reach out. You know, telehealth now is really big too. You can meet with therapists online. So that's a big part of it too. But I think what most people probably aren't recognizing is when you have a pandemic, or in our case too, in the United States, in the UK, protests and things like that, that get people feeling uneasy, it triggers some part of us that is unsettled. And so embrace that trigger. Whatever that trigger is in you, embrace it, because it means it's unsettled and it's creeping up telling you, deal with me, whatever it is, deal with me, fix me, address me, respect me, heal me, whatever it is, that trigger is coming up telling you something. So allow yourself to go there and allow yourself to lean on friends and family to help you as you go there, because that's the best and most healthy thing you can do, is to process that and allow yourself to heal from it. And so oftentimes pandemics and any kind of crisis, world crisis, often showcase the things within us that need to be addressed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really great point, and something we've been highlighting quite a lot, the opportunity that can come from this time of reflection. And, you know, whilst there'll be many people that will be experiencing mental illness symptoms that are new, there'll also be many of us that are having resurgence of mental illness that equally need to be addressed as well. And with your specialism being treating those dealing with addiction, one thing I'm interested in your thoughts on is how there's been a spike in addiction relapse and how that relates to the pandemic.
We teach the opposite of addiction is connection. And so oftentimes with situation like lockdown, people feel isolated. So if you think about people that are in recovery that are attending regular meetings, maybe they're going daily, maybe they're going, you know, it's AA meetings or support groups, they can't do that in person. And it took a little bit for many of these groups to get up online onto Zoom or a Skype platform, something along those lines. But now they're up and running. And so I encourage people to get plugged into an environment where you can still continue to get that support and be around people that can be supportive and understand what you're going through, utilizing these particular devices, the digital era. Phone, you know, if you don't have access to digital aspects, you know, reaching out on the phone, you know, being able to talk to someone, being able to really, again, monitor what you consume. Because if you read all the doom and gloom, it's going to contribute to feelings of frustration, of helplessness, and that causes someone to spiral. And I think putting yourself in safe boundaries. So if you feel like you're drinking too much, but you're not necessarily an alcoholic, but you know that you're certainly abusing it, get it out of your environment. Rule it out. Do not go there. I know people that maybe socially drank that during this pandemic elected not to drink at all because they were concerned about where it could go accidentally, you know? So it's about making sure that you put healthy parameters around you that are going to support you in staying safe, staying connected to people. There's ways to stay connected, different ways that you can utilize, but connection is absolutely the antidote for addiction. And isolation, if you find yourself isolating, reach out to someone. Reach out to someone you trust and someone that you can have in a supportive role and share your concerns and your fears and recognize that this will be triggering of different things, and that's okay. That just means there's more work to be done. And now you know where to start that work if you want to start healing that part of you.
That's such a great way of putting it. And you reminded me of something there with how the techniques for coping that you describe can sound difficult, particularly for those of us in a really dark place and really struggling in lockdown and with the threat of this pandemic. So it can feel really difficult to reach out, and that you do have to take all this ownership of your own health. That for many of us, we have more free time and less other distractions, like maybe work, like socializing, like our normal routines. And so for many people, if you are vulnerable to addiction as a pattern, as a behavior, then now is a time when that can really fester, because you've got less else going on, but higher levels of stress. And so that's a coping mechanism, particularly if you've had it in the past, that right now can be incredibly easy to fall back into, right? One of the reasons why I really wanted to talk to you and specifically about addiction is when the pandemic began, a concern of mine and Danielle's was that mental health was going to be left out of the conversation. You know, that's an ongoing worry for us. And it did seem that whilst we were pleasantly surprised in general, addiction was one area that was really left behind and forgotten about. Do you feel that was similar in the States?
Yes, I do. And I think in some respects, it created the unlikely addict. I hate that word addict, but I'm saying it in quotations, in that it almost became fodder for social media, for people to put out there how much they're drinking a day and how much they're online shopping and how much they're doing. We're overeating. We've gained this many pounds, all these different things, and not recognizing that all these things are coping mechanisms for the stress and the pain. And the other thing that I've seen too is that it creates an environment where someone maybe who struggles with anxiety and takes benzodiazepine for those particular symptoms, you can start slipping into a form of abuse because you're using more of it to control this anxiousness that you have about not knowing what's going to happen. And it creates this fear and panic. So you're seeing people that are flirting with addiction that maybe wouldn't have been at that place before all this happened. And it's merely a coping mechanism to stress and fear.
Right, absolutely. And that's why it can be so infuriating as an onlooker with some understanding of mental health, that you see how certain coping mechanisms are treated so differently, and some are demonized and some aren't. Whereas actually, I think all of us, to a degree, have had to rely on coping mechanisms differently to normal. And some of that is healthy and some of that is unhealthy. But the conversation should always go somewhat beyond a meme.
Yes. And also, too, I think people don't realize when you're on different types of prescription medication like benzos, and this is something that's really important for your listeners to understand. Maybe you've taken that at times when you've had periodic or situational anxiety, and maybe you're having a lot more of it now, and you're taking that and maybe you're chasing it with a little wine. Most people don't understand alcohol and benzos is one of the most lethal combinations that you could ingest in your body. That Ambien, those types of things, people are taking that to sleep because they can't sleep. But then they're saying, I'll have two glasses of wine before I go to bed. And the combination of the two should put me to sleep. Those are very, very dangerous combinations of medication and alcohol to put together that can have some very, very dire consequences. So I encourage people to be very aware of what they're doing and the combinations of the two, because people do not understand the dangers of those combinations.
Right. And I'm sure I mentioned this at the end of the episode as well, but it's that importance of still reaching out for medical support, that even with how stretched we know the NHS here is and healthcare around the world, that doesn't mean your first port of call when it comes to medication should be anyone other than your doctor.
Right, exactly. And working with your doctor, reaching out, being honest, communicating how you feel, they're expecting it. They know people are going through this stuff. So you're not going to be the only person feeling this and the only person that's told them. So reach out and get that support that you need. I think looking at sleep, getting good quality sleep is important in any kind of situation. So take advantage of this time and, you know, allow yourself to sleep a little bit more or get better. Don't get out of bed at 6 a.m. because you had to get into traffic or get on the tube to get to work. You know, you can sleep in, get some better quality sleep. Nutrition is another piece of that. Good nutrition, making sure you're taking care of your body. Exercise is huge, and you can do that at home. Bonding even with our pets. You know, pets can be very cathartic. They can be very instrumental in recovery and being really reflections of us and giving us an outlet to have someone else to care for, if you will. It helps us. I think, you know, the one thing as a society, I think we don't embrace boredom. And maybe it's okay to be bored a little bit. Maybe in boredom, can you allow yourself to free think into different ways that maybe you wouldn't take the time to sit and think about. The other thing I know that I did this is I tackled a bunch of projects I needed to get done. I organized my life at my house when I wasn't at my facility, when I was here. You know, I could organize some of the things, especially for my kids after they were done with school, online school. There were things that we needed to get done, cleaning out closets, organizing this, purging, you know, cleaning, spring cleaning the house, those kinds of things. And so we had a list of projects and we kind of prioritized them. And there was a sense of accomplishment when it got done. We could all look at it and go, wow, okay, that looks good. That attic's cleaned out. So doing things that give you a sense of accomplishment and make you feel good about what you're doing are huge during times like this.
Mm-hmm. And if people are listening to this and either them or someone close to them in their life hasn't been able to implement these coping mechanisms or hasn't been successful in coping during this time and has relapsed to addiction, what would you say?
I would tell them that the best thing you can do is reach out and use your support system. Don't hide it. Don't go into isolation. You're not your addiction. You are an amazing human being that's gifted in many ways. You're struggling to cope with something that's very, very big that many people don't know how to cope with. And I would encourage you to reach out to the people you trust, tell them what's going on, and ask for help. There's nothing wrong with asking for help. We all need help at different times of our life. It's okay to ask for help. And again, don't be tethered to the shame and stigma about relapse, because really recovery is a process. And life hits, and life hits hard. And it's hitting us all hard across the globe in many ways. And it's okay to become vulnerable to that. What's not okay is for you to isolate and allow it to consume you. So that's what I would tell someone, is to go to a safe place where you can be open, where you won't receive that judgment, and you can get the help and support that you need.
Right, absolutely. Because right now, particularly, it can be so much easier not only to relapse, but also to lean into that isolation, that in many ways, the restrictions on our lives are very conducive to further isolation, even beyond them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really great point. And the final thing I should mention as well is that the support is still there. Like you mentioned at the top of the episode, you're an essential worker, your service is continuing. It's vital that people still get the support. So even with everything we're seeing in healthcare across the globe, that doesn't mean that your mental health is any less important. You won't hear me accepting that mental health is less important than physical health any time of the year, particularly right now. So don't let that be a barrier. If you need the help, there's wonderful people like Rachel there for you.
Thank you. And I think too, with mental health stuff, the best thing you can do to navigate a pandemic, there's going to be parts of this we can't control, whether we get exposed to it, whether we get sick from it, maybe we don't get sick from it. But what you can control is creating the strongest person you can possibly create, so that if you do have to weather a storm, you're going into it fully armed with everything in a good place. Because when you have anxiety or depression, it weakens your immune system. And so what you want to do is build that immune system up so that it can tolerate to the best of its ability anything that you may be exposed to. Because right now it's a pandemic. It could be flu. It could be anything, you know, just the common cold, whatever it might be. But the best thing you can do for your body is to create the healthiest immune system you can. And that's by treating both the physical and emotional aspects of your life.
Definitely. That's a great place to round up on then. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.